Welcome to Just Saying It on the SportsMap Radio Network.
You know what I'm saying? I think you do.
Here's Cole Thompson.
Matter what time zone you're in, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Welcome into Just Saying It right here on the SportsMap Radio Network. Cole Thompson back in the driver's seat, getting you caught up on everything you might have missed. Headed into a fun Friday morning action, 800-224-2004. That's the number. Call on the show. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you hate. Let's be real. You love everything about this show. We know you love everything about this show. And we want to hear from you, the listener. So make sure you tune in. 800-224-2004. At Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter. At SportsMap Radio. Download the Just Saying It podcast version of the show on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, Audio Boom, wherever else you get your podcast listening systems. We got you covered 24/7, 365 days out of the year. And do me one more favor. Make sure you download the SportsMap Radio app. Carry this in your pocket throughout your day so you don't miss a second of all of our great local programming. The wonderful, delightful Michael Hernandez on the other side of the glass producing fun 3 hours that always seem to fly right on by. We have a jam-packed show. We have so much to get through. We know what we're going to talk about. There's some other things that we got to talk about. Las Vegas Raiders head coach Josh McDaniels comes out with a statement discussing why he is not nervous about the likes of Jimmy Garoppolo's status. I would be shaking in my boots right now because if I am betting my career as the Raiders head coach on a guy that I know and love, but maybe is not going to be available for the start of the season. Tom Brady has made it abundantly clear what his status is when it comes to potentially playing quarterback again in the NFL. There's several other teams that made headlines yesterday for the right reasons, some of it the wrong reasons. Southeastern Conference, you know, the conference that I love and know very well in the likes of college football, is now back in the headlines for something that I think is definitely a argumentative point when it comes to the college football playoff, but not in the exact same way that you probably would think. We're going to talk about that. I want to give you a little bit more parity on the likes of college football because, well, I love college football. And there's one team in the MLB who certainly has impressed me because I also picked them very early on to be a sleeper in the wild card race. I believe that sleeper pick is no longer a sleeper. People are starting to get on board, and I was on the bandwagon well before you and everyone else. But we start off, of course, in the Mile High City, where last night game one has come and gone, and with it, we have a little bit more clarity and a little bit more parity when it comes to discussing how this postseason series could go if, only if, this is the version of the Miami Heat that we are going to get. 800-224-2004. 104-93 victory for the home team, Denver, as they improve to 1-0 in game one of this epic final. Now, I know what you're going to say. Cole, you only said that they won by 9 points. 9 points? This should be making you feel very good about yourself if you are a Miami Heat fan. And in a sense, you are right. Because of those 9 points, very well could be the difference of you just by draining a couple of shots, making a couple of key moments at the right time, having a couple of clutch overall performances from a couple of players early on that would have helped you out later. That's very fine and dandy. And you can also throw in a little bit of the altitude. For those of you that haven't seen a viral photo going around the likes of the Twitterverse, well, even the broadcasters had to be brought in oxygen tanks during breaks because they understand the altitude is up there. I can tell you this because if I am a skier, I love skiing. Me and my dad have this very old tradition where we go skiing. It's just him and I. We go out, we'll go somewhere in Colorado, or we'll go somewhere up in the mountains in California, and we'll go for about 4 or 5 days, and we'll just go ahead and enjoy ourselves. Wake up really early in the morning, really enjoy the entire afternoon. We'll be done by about 4 p.m., and we don't get off the mountain. That first day is one of those days where even I have to go ahead and pump the brakes a little bit. Not in terms of, sorry about that. Not in terms of me not being able to go hard down double blacks, but me more so probably cutting it earlier. Like I'll be done by about 2:30 instead of like 4 p.m. That's just because of I know what my body can go through. And a lot of that's due to me adjusting to the oxygen. So for anybody out there that's saying Miami can't win in Denver, sadly mistaken. They very well can. And because the way the playoff series is going to go, where they'll have 48 hours to recoup and recalibrate, that's another 48 hours in Denver to where the body will get used to the altitude. But this was a game that was already over before the first quarter. And a lot of reasons was not because of the altitude. It was because of you had no idea how to stop the role players. This was a role player game. And the reason that's important is because of now every single person in South Beach, now every single person on the Miami Heat bench, now every single person in the building of the Pepsi Center realizes just how dangerous and how deadly a Nikola Jokic can be when he is not your number one. Sure, he finishes with the triple-double last night, but it's not the points that you want to focus in on. What it is the disparity of how you can't be able to stop him. How there is not a player right now in the NBA who I think has more of a uniqueness to his game that allows him to work in a wide variety of different avenues. First quarter, they found a way to absolutely contain him down low inside the paint. He had one big shot. And I know you're going to say, well, he only had one big shot. Did he even make the shot? No, he didn't. So that first quarter, he was held scoreless. But he was not a non-factor. That's the key that everyone wants to seem to focus in on. Because you can go ahead and look at the stat line and say, oh, well, he only took one shot. They did a great job containing him. Sure, they did when it came to being around the bucket. They didn't contain him when it came to being that role player, being that guy who could be an advantage in the passing game, down low in rebounds, get second shot attempts off. And that's exactly what he did. He finished last night with not only 10 rebounds, but also 14 assists. And those 14 assists, five of them came in the first quarter. So you knew what type of game this was going to be because of even when you were able to go ahead and double team him, take him out of the scoring atmosphere, he still was finding ways to win. A couple passes out to Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon was on fire first half. He had 10 of his 16 points in that first quarter. He had 14 of his 16 points in that first half. Michael Porter Jr., 14 points. He was 2 of 11 from downtown, which is something that I think you need to focus in on if you're Michael Malone. But he also had 13 rebounds. He also had a couple of assists in this game. He had two big blocks, one of which was against Caleb Martin, that really sucked the energy, I think, out of those same role players that we talk about in Miami, completely away from Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. You also had great performances from KCP. He had great performances from Bruce Brown. He got 10 points coming off the bench. And then naturally, in the second half, you start to watch that parity and that clarity come together. Yeah, we're not going to be able to stop the front two. Jamal Murray finishes with 26 points, 10 total assists. And then Jokic starts coming on in the second half, finishes with the team high 27. The reality is that if you think you can stop Jokic, you have to stop him in multiple avenues. You can't allow him to get his points. But at the same time, you know he's going to get his points. It may come in the final 5 minutes of a game when you're in a must-win showdown. It may come when the game is tied at, say, 89 apiece. But he is going to get his points. The problem is that if he gets his points, you need to be able to eliminate second-chance opportunities. So when you're playing in a zone defense, then you go ahead and you try and get someone to cover over the top while Bam's blocking him down low, you still have to find a way to keep that avenue closed on the perimeter where a Michael Porter Jr. is waiting in the wings and his body is already turned to get the ball and shoot. You have to be able to get rid of the short passes right behind him to where a guy like Bruce Brown, to where a guy like Aaron Gordon, to where a guy like Jamal Murray is going to make an easy layup and put 2 points on the board. You have to be able to stop him to be able to not get that second chance opportunity with the rebound. You have to outbox him in that avenue. And it just feels impossible. You know, there's a movie, and it's a very terrible movie. I'm not sure if you've ever seen it, but The Benchwarmers. And it's got David Spade, and it's got John Heder, the guy that played Napoleon Dynamite. Gosh, Tina, that dude. And there's a guy by the name of Rob Schneider who plays the main guy. And everyone in the movie is like, well, why is Rob Schneider just beating the living crap out of all these kids? Well, what Rob Schneider's character does is he starts to get his other friends involved. And he nearly blows the game. But in the first half, basically Nikola Jokic was Rob Schneider in that movie. Let's get my teammates involved. Let's get them some buckets. Let's get them some opportunities to put up some points for us. Let's look like the most cohesive team that we have shown throughout the regular season. And he did. And because of that, they were able to set the tone early. 9 points may show up on the board in the differential of this game, but the game was over after the first quarter. You saw it in the eyes of both Denver. You saw it in the eyes of both Miami. They knew that going into game two on Sunday, they were going to be playing on their P's and Q's. The I's were going to have to be dotted. The T's are going to have to be crossed for either one of these rosters to walk away victorious. And I think that's a good sign if you were Denver fans, because of now that you know Aaron Gordon can play, now that you know that KCP can play, now that you know that Michael Porter can also shoot, they can give you valuable minutes in the bucket. They can average about 47% from the field down low for an easy two. Now you know what is your advantages and what is your disadvantages. It wasn't the altitude. Certainly that factored in, I think, a little bit, but it wasn't something that was the negating factor of the outcome of this game. It wasn't something that was truly the deciding notion of what worked and what didn't. And that, to me, means more than anything else out there, is that I can see where Denver is going to try and continue to dominate. And what you have to do is be able to stop Nikola Jokic. Here's the problem. You can't. So you have to decide in that moment, what's the easier way to determine who's going to walk out victorious in this matchup? Is it by getting those points for Jokic, getting those 31-point games and maybe a double-double? Or is it potentially getting those opportunities to where he averages 12 points, 12 rebounds, 12 points, 12 rebounds, 10 assists, but he's not getting you those other points at the point of attack? That's how you're going to have to decide what is the best plan of action to go ahead and defend Denver.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Miami walks away with the loss, but maybe they have a bit more clarity on how they're going to be able to win this series against a team like the Denver Nuggets. 800-224-2004. 104-93 win for Denver at home at the Pepsi Center. They improved to 1-0 to begin this postseason run, or NBA Finals run for that matter. Yet, even though I won't give all the credit to a team like Miami, I will say, Miami fans, let me walk you off the ledge a little bit. You were this close to making things somewhat interesting in the fourth quarter. Didn't mean you were going to win this game. I can tell you right now, at some point last night, I started doing radio prep. I started watching a couple of other things. I was keeping up with the baseball scores. And I still was watching the game, but I knew that the game was over. Yeah, I could not tell what the score was going to be, if it was going to end up being a 15-point differential, a 21-point differential, a 9-point differential. But I think I knew the game was over. Here's the good news if you are a Miami Heat fan. You saw excellent offensive production from a key role player that you've been waiting to see have excellent key offensive production throughout this entire postseason. That would be Bam Adebayo. Bam last night had a 26-point outing, the team high. He also shot 13-25 from the field, did not try to go ahead and drain a bunch of threes, 13 total rebounds, 5 total assists. So a double-double, very solid performance. But when you hear double-double with Bam Adebayo in this postseason, you're thinking more so 11 rebounds, 10 assists, or 15 rebounds, 11 assists. That's what you're thinking. Instead, it was 25 points. Very, very, very solid production. You had Gabe Vincent get 9 points. He was the only player last night that really was consistent from downtown. Only guy who finished with at least 50% of his shots from the three-point line. That's a good thing for you. The problem is, you can't shoot 33.3% from the three-point line. You just can't. And the problem with that is, you continue to take shots. But to digress, that 33.3% is what you would see if you only read a stat line. What really needs to happen is you can't have guys like Marcus Strus and a couple of other players not give you those points. And the problem with that was in this game, Caleb Martin really struggled down low. He was only 1-for-7 for the field. Marcus Struss didn't have a single point in 21 minutes of action on 19 shot attempts. That's a problem. Duncan Robinson, and can't believe I'm saying this one, Haywood Highsmith had better production in last night's game than two players who have been focal points of your offense throughout this entire postseason run. You can't have those type of performances. Jimmy Butler, 13 points. You really need him to play a little bit better, at least when it comes to being around the boards and when it comes to him being around the paint. 6 of 14. The good news here is that there is a formula to win. Excellent shots from number one. You need Jimmy Butler to go ahead and give you more valuable clutch moments. He has to be able to play a little bit better. And he will. I have no doubt about it. Every single star player in life is going to have a game where maybe they don't live up to expectation. Maybe where they falter and fizzle and fall a little bit flat. That just happens. That just is a part of the game. But how do you react that in game two? The problem is also, how do you keep that offensive production from a player like Bam Adebayo alive and well heading into game two? It certainly is something that is going to be a key catalyst and a storyline to follow going into the next set of games, and hopefully when it transpires down in South Beach, starting on, what would it be, Wednesday night, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah, because there'll be 2 days of break for them to travel, get down to Miami, Florida, get through the press conferences, do all that shindig, and then prepare for game three. You need to be able to carry that over there. The other thing that you can say is that if you get better with your role players really stepping up, a Marcus Struss, Caleb Martin, a Duncan Robinson, you're going to feel a lot better about your situation because of when you shoot 13 and 19, as long as that Marcus Struss is not 0-for-9 and instead it's more so like a Gabe Vincent 4-for-8 and then a Marcus Struss say 3-for-9 or 4-for-9, you're in a lot better of a situation. 9 points of differential. Three of those shots go in for a guy like Marcus Struss. Maybe you only lose by 3 in this matchup. And then those 3, you're seeing less time on the opportunity for a guy like Nikola Jokic to take a longer break, a Jamal Murray to take a longer break, Aaron Gordon to take a longer break. That's good for you. That's a very good thing for you. The other thing is that you got to still play the physical. You have to decide right now, what do you want to do when it comes to Nikola Jokic? Because he just is a difference maker. He's a hyper-athletic big that can win down low in rebounds, can pass the ball all across the avenues, and there's not going to be a lot of opportunities for him to miss, and he's still going to get his points. So you have to decide, how do you want him to eat? Do you want him to eat with double-doubles by rebounds, by assists? Do you want to take him out of the running when it comes to points? Do you want to take him out of the rebounds when it comes to second shot opportunities? You have to figure out your avenue, what's going to work for you in this postseason. How are you going to be able to contain Nikola Jokic from not having a triple-double, which almost seems impossible at this point, but I digress. It's how do you allow him to feed? What are the keys that you're going to let him get his money, get his points, get his second shots? You have to take away one of those avenues. You have to. That is going to be the biggest point for you moving into the second half of the series. That's going to be the biggest point for you moving into game two. I actually think that Miami's in a very good spot right now. Listen, they just played a 7-game series, a very variety of a 7-game series. We're up by 3, momentum is riding high, they don't have a lot of opportunities to get some rest, they have their mind on the money on the mind, and eventually, they lose 3 games in a row. Then they play a very physical game 7 and immediately get on a plane to try and get their bodies acclimated to the weather in the likes of Denver, to get the altitude in their disposal. If they win game 6, maybe their bodies are at the physical peak to where I don't worry about how this game is going to go. I think that probably they lose this matchup, but they lose this matchup because of the physicalness and the role-playing aspects that came with Denver. They don't lose this matchup because of any bit of altitude. And I think that you saw that last night, that for most of the game, they had some flaws, but nothing really that crazy to where you think the altitude was a major, major factor. Was certainly an avenue, but not the reason you win or lose a game. I think that is going to be really the interesting part. Now you have a full 72 hours to go ahead and get your body more acclimated. So 96 hours of you being up in Denver weather, you being up at that altitude. I remember when I just told the story. I go skiing all the time with my dad. The first day, I usually don't eat a lot. And it's not because of I'm not hungry. It's because of I know I'm just going to get really sick afterwards. I know that I just need to get a good night's sleep. I need to probably get some coffee, get some bananas, potassium, protein in my body, but very little, just enough to keep my carbohydrates moving, to get my body sustenized, for me to be able to not pass out from physical exhaustion, mental exhaustion, and of course, body deteriorating from the nutrients that you need to be alive and well. That's just one thing that I've noticed. I don't worry about Miami. I don't. And again, Miami is one of those teams where they could easily win a game or lose a game, and you still don't take them out of the running, because if they still have a superstar in Jimmy Butler, and they have good role players. Role players, I thought, were really, really key in this game. Look at the opposing side. When you see guys like KCP and Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter Jr. getting up a lot of clutch shots, that, at least in my opinion, is enough of a sign for you to not really feel hesitant over. It makes you feel a little bit more relaxed over. Makes you kind of feel, hey, you know what? I'm not that concerned. That's what you just need from the opposing side. You can't have just Bam Adebayo giving you 26 points and then wasting that opportunity by not having two of your key focal points of the offense basically deliver duds. You just can't have that happen. I'm not worried about Miami. I'm really not. I still think that they are very much in control of their own destiny. I still think that Miami can easily go ahead and get this series to a game 7. I still believe that because of how this game is going to go, they're eventually going to be fine in figuring out the do's and don'ts of how to be able to build this team. I'm okay. I really don't think that you have a lot of concern when it comes to Miami right now. Now, after game 2, and if they still play the way that they do, and I don't mean the altitude problem or not a solid performance from a Jimmy Butler, I mean the role players not stepping up at the right time, that is where the problem lies. That is where you have the questions. That is where, right now, you're a little bit hesitant when it comes to these things. And that is something that I think is going to be a underlining point to where a lot of people aren't paying attention to the Heat. Heat are still in a good spot. Heat are still very much in a good spot. They're alive and well. And the biggest thing that they are is they know how to make up for this. They know what they need to do to put themselves back in the win column. They know what they need to do to put themselves back on the opposing side of a victory over defeat. And 9 points isn't bad. It isn't. It really isn't that bad of a game. The game kind of went the way that I thought it would. First quarter, whoever dominated was going to get the victory. Guess who dominated? The Denver Nuggets. Denver was able to go ahead and have their role players step up. Miami wasn't. Get your role players involved. Keep Bam's offense going. You're going to be fine, Miami fans.
It's Friday. So let's look ahead to the weekend and get Cole Thompson's best bets.
Place your bet.
All right. Just because game 1 has happened in the NBA Finals does not mean that these bets won't come into fruition for the remainder of the postseason series. 800-224-2004. We are not going to go ahead and bet who is walking away with the NBA title. I've already given you my thoughts. I think Denver does it in 6. I do believe that at some point, Miami will catch higher. The Heat will be scorching. Jimmy Butler will come back to life. You will see Tyler Hero play at least one game in this postseason to where that will lead to a victory. But I do believe that Denver, the way that you saw them play last night, even before they played last night, they're more physical. They also have really great role players that if they do deliver at the right time, they put themselves in a great conversation to now not only win this series, but dominate this series in those victories. +9 differential when it comes to the win-loss and points. I could easily see that happen in game 2. I could see that happen in game 4. I could see that happen in game 6, a must-win game. So I do think that Denver will walk away, but there are prop bets I think that we can make, and these are bets that I think will come to fruition in terms of productivity, in terms of rebounds, in terms of assist, that you probably want to throw a little bit of cash on, walk away a bit more rich at the end of the day. That way you can make sure that you just have a very safe, fun week or weekend when I am not in the building because I will be on my honeymoon. So let's go ahead and get these down. I have about 9 bets that you want to go ahead and follow. First one. Most points in the NBA Finals for the Nuggets. Nikola Jokic at plus 130. He already last night led the team in points, and he did so without even having a point in the first quarter. He did not come alive until the second half. So you already know that if you're able to go ahead and defend him down low and take away his second shot opportunities, he still is going to eat at some point throughout the afternoon. He still is going to find a way to get some buckets on buckets on buckets. Again, the problem here, if you are a Miami Heat fan, is not how do we stop Nikola Jokic from getting those points. It's how many points are we allowed to let Nikola Jokic have on any given night. The Joker gets the last laugh in this postseason. I do think that he will lead the team in points. That means throughout the entire game. So maybe one night he'll only have 14. The next night he'll have 37. Then he'll have 25 through the next four games to where he walks away with 561 points or 372 points, whatever that average may be. Go ahead and take the plus 130. Most points in the finals for the Heat. I know it's a little bit boring, but I am going to go with Jimmy Butler. This is at plus 1,200. What does this mean? I think that Jimmy Butler is going to get his points when he goes back to Miami. Maybe he'll walk away with, say, 21 in game two. Maybe he'll walk away with only 18 in game two. Playing from the home crowd gives you a little bit more of an ambiance, gives you a little bit more of that sustenance, gives you a little bit more of that firepower. Bam Adebayo, we have not seen have the type of game that he had last night throughout the entire run of the Eastern Conference playoffs. He was more so a guy that would give you some bit of value defensively, but his offensive production, pew pew at the very best. It was low, bad. Anything you want to say. So I do think that it's easier to bet on the guy who has been clutch in multiple playoff games. Especially against Milwaukee, especially against Boston, against the likes of the New York Knicks. I do think that he will be able to go ahead and finish with the team high in points, even if it only comes in two matchups, where he gets 41 at home in game three, or he gets 38 at home in game four. One of those things I think will come into fruition more so than a guy like Bam Adebayo averaging 24 points per game in the remainder of the series. Next up, most 3 points, I'm going to go with Michael Porter Jr. I think Michael Porter Jr. right now is the guy you want to keep a close eye on. The betting line is at plus 400. Here's the thing. Went 2 of 11 last night. Do you know who made more 3 points than the likes of Michael Porter Jr. for the Denver Nuggets? Nobody. Nobody made more 3 points. Jamal Murray went 2 of 7 on the night, but he only had 2 3-pointers. I think that Michael Porter Jr.'s best asset is that he's always finding ways to get open, waiting in the corner, for a guy like a Nikola Jokic, a guy like an Eric Gordon, to try and drive it to the paint, take away 2 or 3 defenders to now play down low, and he's waiting for that second shot, waiting for that opportunity to where the ball comes into his hands, and he's immediately pigeonholed to where that bucket goes up, that bucket goes in. You now have a three-point disadvantage if you are a team like Miami. So I do think that Porter Jr. will finish with a team high, and really a record high in this series. I have no doubt that he walks away maybe with only about a 33.2% success rate, but those 33.2% is higher than anybody else that's going to be playing on either side of the court. Next up, most assists, Nikola Jokic, plus 1,000. This one's an easy one. The guy last night had a grand total of 14 total assists. He's only going to continue to do this. Now, maybe it won't be 14 every single night. Maybe one night it'll be 11. Maybe one night it'll be 22. Maybe one night it'll be 9. But the fact is, I do think he is going to be close to averaging a triple-double because if you're not going to be able to contain him. He just does everything possible for you. And that leads us into our next prop bet, most rebounds. Nikola Jokic, last night, finished with only 10. Michael Porter Jr. had more. But again, this is throughout a postseason run. Bam Adebayo was the only other player to finish with more rebounds in a game. And that's where I think Bam is going to make his money in this postseason. To be able to go ahead and either grab second shot opportunities, because he did finish with 4 offensive rebounds, where Nikola Jokic only finished with, if I'm not mistaken, 1 total offensive rebound, if even 1 total offensive rebound. I think that that's where he is going to be most effective. But you can't say that you're not going to get more opportunities when you're getting up with a guy like Nikola Jokic. This is where the Joker is dominating. The guy is just a triple-double machine. And I do think that he will finish with a triple-double, which the line is at right now, plus 1,900. Go ahead and put your money down. This is what he does. This is what he did throughout the regular season. This is why I said it's almost impossible not to have him in the top two, and some people would even say outside the number one spot when it came to MVP voting. Because when you're averaging a triple-double, it's very uncommon. It is. You don't see this happen on a daily instance. You see this happen with key players that have been such focal points to your success, and he's the guy that easily is going to pass the ball. He's the guy that's going to get a lot of rebounds, and he may only finish with 11 points. You finish with 10, 10, 11, guess what? That's a triple-double. He's going to get a triple-double throughout the postseason. Next up, under. Take the under on this one. Jamal Murray averages 25.5 points per game. Because the thing is, they're going to eventually start going to go and try and do everything possible to take Nikola Jokic out of the game. But I think that he's more so about a 23-point per game guy. He's going to have one or two games where the numbers are probably closer towards 17, 16, which means his average goes down. This is the average throughout the postseason. So say there's a six-game series and he has a 31-point game, a 26-point game, and everyone else has, I mean, every other game, he's about 19. That average is not going to be affected because of the more games you play, the lower the number decreases. And I have been a proponent from the get-go saying that this game, this series, will go to six. So at some point, those 17 points lead to about a 17-point average. That 38-point game gets you up to about a 19.7-point average or a 21.7-point average. It's all about when you get hot at the right time. If he is unable to go ahead and sustain these 25, 27 points per game in the first three matchups, well, then that's not going to be able to set the tone going into the last three matchups of the series. So I say take the under at 25.5 points per game. Over. Jimmy Butler averages 7.1 rebounds per game. What happened last night? Jimmy Butler had 7 rebounds. So my prediction right now is pretty much on brand because of all he needed was one more rebound to where if he doesn't get, say, 7 rebounds in game 2 and he gets 6 rebounds, well, that number still would have been averaging around 7 and it would have been closer to 7.1. So I think that's what you're going to see. He'll probably get about 8 to 9 rebounds per game, and then he'll have one game where he'll have 6, and then he'll have about 7 in the next 2. So that puts you right around 7.3 rebounds per game. Right on the money, right on brand. That's what he's been averaging throughout the postseason. Doesn't think it's going to change anytime soon because of he has a 7-point rebound game in game 1. Over, Jamal Murray averages 6.5 assists per game. How many assists did he have in last night's game? Plain and simple, he was right around 10. I think that 10 is about the average of what you're looking for. So 6.5 means he can have a game where he gets about 7, a game where he gets about 4, and a game where he gets about 11. He does that. He's somewhere right around that 7.3, 7.8 range. 7.8 is more than 6.5. More than 6.5 is more than the average than what you're looking for. The last two bets, real fast. Nuggets in game 6, 4-2 victory at plus 400. This is a series that I think is going to go ahead and end in the likes of, it's going to end in the likes of Miami. The game is going to end on the road for the Nuggets. That's just what's going to happen in the series. I definitely believe that. Now, here's the question. Are they up 3-0 and they lose back-to-back games to where it now forces a game 6? Does it happen where they're up 2-2 and then they win back-to-back games? After you see what happens when Miami goes back home, they set the tone. What's it going to take for this series to go to 6? Who's to say? But I do think at the end of the day, this is a 6-game series. Too much power from a guy like Jokic, too much consistency from a guy like Murray. That ends up paying dividends, gets them the victory.
You're listening to Just Saying It on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Cole Thompson.
Money really does grow on trees, and it certainly grows on the trees in the likes of the Motor City because somehow, some way, that's what you're getting with Monty Williams being your next head coach. 800-224-2004. It's Cole Thompson. We're just saying it right here on the Sports Map Radio Network at Mr. Cole Thompson on Twitter, at Sports Map Radio. Monty Williams, the former head coach, NBA Coach of the Year for the Phoenix Suns, now is off the market. and another job has closed, leaving two open vacancies for the upcoming 2023-2024 season. He signed a six-year deal worth $78.5 million, the largest contract ever given out in NBA history to finally fix the likes of the Detroit Pistons. This is a big deal for multiple reasons, because when I look at a team like the Pistons, I actually said there was one coach that I do believe makes a lot of sense for this organization to get to where you want them to be and where they should have been probably this year, definitely where you want to be going into next year without question. I thought Doc Rivers was an actual really good spot. If there was ever a person who was going to go and be a part of a culture builder in the city, this is where Doc Rivers needed to be. Because what do we know about Doc Rivers? Guy sets the tone. Guy puts people in their place. Guy goes out and makes sure that the names that you're trying to build your franchise around end up hitting, prospering, and thriving. That way, when you actually start to win games, when you actually start to get over the hump, when that culture is established, then you can go ahead and fire him and bring in the right person. That's what Philadelphia is doing right now with Nick Nurse. Culture established, great role players. You know who are your superstars. You know who you want to build your franchise around. Nick Nurse is now here to not stroke the egos of guys like Joel Embiid, but more so here to temper the egos of guys like Joel Embiid. And maybe if you get back James Harden. Monty Williams now comes into the building, and his job is to not only build a culture, but probably the bigger thing is to put this team in the right course so that way they don't regret all the moves they made. Because here's the thing about a team like Detroit. They're a roster that has been picking number one the last several seasons. At some point, you get tired of hearing when this team is going to be able to come back, when this team is finally going to get over the hump, when this roster is finally going to be built. Your job is now to actually say, okay, we have the right coach in the building to elevate our status of play. You have young players, Jaden Ivey. I think he's going to be a really big superstar in this sport. I really do. I loved him when he was coming out of Purdue. Cade Cunningham. Cunningham, been a little bit injury prone. Didn't play all this year. Hopefully he'll be back next year, and that former number one pick won't end up looking like a former number one bust. You also have a couple of other young guys like Jaren Duran. You traded for a guy in Jonathan Wiseman. There's a core in place to where you think this can be your avenue to get a culture established. But Monty Williams is not here to establish a culture. Monty Williams is here to win basketball games. And you know this because you don't give out a $78.5 million deal to anybody for that matter, especially when in the NBA, contracts are guaranteed. So he may only coach 1 year. For an average salary of $13 million, he's not getting $13 million. He's getting $78.5 million, which means if he doesn't play again, that's okay. You want to know why? Because if he's going to eventually make up that money. He never has to coach again because if he'll have enough to be able to retire and never have to see the light of day if he wants to. Neither will his family. No one in his family will have to see the light of day for the next 25, 30 years because of even though you know that at some point there is going to be an influx in terms of productivity. That is something that is going to occur. What I will say, though, is that this is a deal that can go one of two ways. It is only going to go one of two ways. And that's why this is such a prominent figure. That number is such a big asking point. You're either going to win a lot of games. You're either going to make it to the playoffs. And you are going to have future potential all-stars in Jaden Ivey, in Jonathan Wiseman, in Jaren Duran, in Cade Cunningham, or you're going to have to just basically admit we're a franchise that has never gotten back to what we were back in the 90s. We're never going to get back to what we were with the Bad Boys Pistons in the 80s. That's just who we are. This is the new norm of Detroit basketball. Because of when you get that type of contract offer, there is no selling point of, oh, let's just go ahead and see what happens down the line. No, it's one or the other. Do I think that Monty Williams will have a year to be able to establish his value? Probably. It's a little bit similar to what Quinn Snyder did. When Snyder came over and joined the Atlanta Hawks, Snyder has full power. He has full say on what is and isn't going to happen under his watch. He will build the roster in his image. If that image includes DeJounte Murray and Trae Young, good. Then you have your two young star players that you build around. If it doesn't include them, well, he's moving off of them. LA is going to go ahead and trade, and they're going to go ahead and establish a brand new culture, one that they believe will work underneath Quinn Snyder. Same thing with Monty Williams. He'll have 1 year to decide who belongs on my team and who doesn't. Now, after that year, it's about building. It's about prospering. It's about now going into the potential play-in tournament aspect. And then in year three, you are not a play-in team. You are a team that is now hosting playoff games. You are a team that is guaranteed to at least make it to the first round of the playoffs. Then in year four, you better have a championship aspiration. That is what you're looking for if you're Monty Williams. So the deal has to happen one of two ways. There is no other avenue around it. You either immediately fall apart, and this team just deteriorates. They say to themselves, this is the version of us. This is the best we're going to be. We might as well just go ahead and suck it in and embrace the suckage. Sorry to the fans that live in the Motor City. We're not going to be able to pan out the way that you all expect us to. Or they're going to prosper, they're going to thrive, and they're going to be a team that has a very similar trajectory to one that Monty Williams just coached in Phoenix. That's all this is. It's a risk. It's a risk that I would not make no matter what. If I was a GM, that's a risk I would not make if I was ownership. But it's one that I think I can understand because if at some point you see the way that you've been building this roster, you see the way that you've been back at the lottery picks every single year, you see the way that you've been able to get young up-and-coming talent and the talent just hasn't been able to meet the expectations, you got to be able to go ahead and figure this stuff out at some point. And if you can't, well, unfortunately, that's just a sour sign for your future as an organization. 800-224-2004. Let's go ahead and talk about the jobs that are available. Which is a better opportunity for you? Is it Toronto, which is now going to be going through a complete and total rebuild, in my opinion? Yeah, you have some young players like Scotty Barnes that maybe you'll have to be your new focal point, but you're basically going to go ahead and hit the reset button in the Eastern Conference. You're just not doing much. Or number two, and this is probably the bigger one, Phoenix. It's actually Toronto, in my opinion. And the reason why I say Phoenix is because if Phoenix is under new ownership with Matt Ishbia, Matt Ishbia is not going to handle going and working for the mediocrity. He's not going to handle being an organization that takes two steps back to take 10 steps forward. Toronto will. Toronto gets it right now. Toronto sees the way the Eastern Conference is built, and they're saying, we need to be able to establish this foundation in place to where we can go ahead and actually build a long, rich tradition of winning culture. And that's fine, I think, in Toronto, because the Raptors are okay being bad for them to be good. You can't be bad when you have a Kevin Durant on your team. You can't be bad when you have a Devin Booker still getting all NBA accolades. You just can't be. So the coach that comes in there will have the immediate expectation of not winning the division, not winning the Pacific Division, not even going to be a top five seed in the Western Conference. The expectation is you were the missing link, so because of that, you better be the reason we are back in the playoffs. We are in the NBA Finals. We are hoisting up NBA Finals trophies because we just gave up a bucket load of cash. We just gave up a surplus of picks and players to Brooklyn to go get a superstar in Kevin Durant. And we're willing to build around Kevin Durant. He may be a little bit on the older side. That pepper gray in his beard may be coming in a little bit more prominent by 2025. But by 2025, when his contract is going to be up for debate, and when Devin Booker is going to be a little bit older, a little bit wiser, and probably a little bit more tired about his type of impact that he has with this organization, your entire goal is just to be able to get you over the hump. So Toronto maybe is a safer job right now because if at the end of the day, if you are Phoenix, your entire process is how do we win the NBA championship? Because if we have the talent to do so. More so, we have a 1-2 combination that very well can go toe-to-toe with anybody in the league. We have a 1-2 combination that very well can be just as talented as anybody else out there. And if you think otherwise, well, that's on you for being foolish because if we did not just make these trades, we did not just go out there and spend this type of money to be a middle-of-the-pack team. Toronto, we're willing to suck. We're willing to be bad. We know that we are a roster that needs a bunch of alterations and a bunch of drop-off and a bunch of dumping the salary cap for us to get good. Best way to get good? Build young talent around Scotty Barnes. So I actually think that right now Toronto is the safer job and it is the better job because Matt Ishbia did not buy the Phoenix Suns to build the team in his image. He bought the Phoenix Suns to be the ace in the hole that gets them over the hump and finally wins an NBA title.